It's time for Done Being Single with your hosts, Treva and Robbie Scharf. If you're dating the same type over and over again, making the same mistakes and not finding love, then you're not done being single. What you need is some tough love dating intervention, Treva and Robbie style. Whether you're new to dating or have been dating forever, we've got you covered. Now, here are your hosts, Treva and Robbie Scharf.
Wow. It's never, that never gets old, does it?
Can we just get a round of applause for getting through our childhood?
Did we?
That's for me.
Wait.
I'm giving myself one.
Okay. I'll give yourself one too later.
Thank you so much. It wasn't easy.
Who says we're through our childhood?
No, and we're still getting through it. And
don't you call me 10-year-old Robbie all the time. So, you know,
I do, and you're helping
stretching
me
out a bit.
And you're getting me through mine.
Okay.
As we speak. And, you know, today is about childhood, and you may be saying, what? This is a dating show. Why are we talking about childhood? But you know what? Childhood is everything.
Yes.
It's everything.
And experiencing childhood is everything.
So it's not, I don't think it's crazy to talk about childhood, even though we're well into adulthood, because.
What is your tie-in here?
Because I feel that it's never too late to heal your past or resolve old issues, bring closure, break old habits and patterns. And I think it's possible to do. I think it is, I'm just a true believer in it. I think it's, you know, you got to do it in order to find healthy love. You do, you know, it's not just any love, but operative word, healthy love.
So what you're saying is that certain things, as we were brought up, have a tendency to stay with us, good and bad, and can affect future relationships based on the way we were brought up, our parents, things we encountered.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it plays out every day of your life, and it plays out especially for when you're married, as I'm learning, because now you, Robbie, are able to get, you haven't known me very long.
No.
But you are seeing.
What are you going to surprise me with?
You're getting a real glimpse into my programming, my childhood, my upbringing, the family dynamics.
It's okay to hold back a little bit, please.
You know, I try to keep this from you for the first.
Yeah, yeah. That.
You know, just kind of like how I make fun of your gas. You know, you didn't fart and burp when we were dating. But the minute we said I do, suddenly you turn into a gas factory.
I did not.
But I was very open with my shit. Okay, get all the sound effects out now because this is going to be like,
it's just
going to
happen.
This is going to be your super heavy show.
Yeah, I know, and unfortunately, I can't help but feel.
Okay, too late now. You're in.
Okay,
you can't go running with your hair on fire. But so this is all really important stuff, I think, especially for people who are still struggling with dating and relationships and finding healthy love. I think that it's never too late to talk about your childhood. It's never too late to go back and maybe heal what is broken or was broken. You agree?
Yes.
And no one's perfect. And no one had a perfect childhood. And by the way, it's all relative. Childhood is relative. So, you know, I said tough childhood.
It's all about your relatives.
I said tough childhood in the title of the show, but I didn't have to say tough. I could just have said childhood. Don't let your childhood keep you from finding love. Okay. So because tough is relative, what might have been a tough childhood, you know, for me might look like a cakewalk for someone else.
All right. So let's give me some examples of what we are talking about here. How does this pertain? How does it apply? How are you able
I
to
am
confront
not,
what has happened in
okay,
your childhood
so
you're no longer
okay,
affected
so,
by this.
So without blaming, and I'm not blaming my parents. My parents did a really great job because...
I said I'm sorry, so shut up!
Yeah, that's right. I say that to you five times a day. Okay, my parents did a great job. Because obviously, look at who I married. Look where I am and look who I, you know, what I became. Okay. But with that said, I think it's no coincidence that maybe I was single for as long as I was because in part due to them. And maybe, I don't know, you know, maybe they didn't model healthy commitment for me, which they didn't. They were divorced when I was very young. But I really believe you shouldn't let your past stop you from achieving whatever you want in life. So yeah, my parents were divorced when I was about 6 or 7, and neither of them got remarried. Well, my mom never remarried. My dad remarried 40 years later. Huh. So I didn't really see healthy relationships growing up. They were, you know, with other people. Excuse me, with other people. Mm-hmm. And I'm not blaming them for keeping me single all these years. I mean, we could talk. We could have 15 more episodes about why I stayed single for so long. But I know you had a totally different experience. Your parents were together forever, and yes. You were single. What's the matter with you?
Well, nothing.
There's something matter with you.
And no, it didn't work that way. You know, I have two older sisters, and I had a very different set of parents than they did. Being 8, 9 years younger than my middle sister, they had a tougher upbringing than I did. And I kind of got the second wave of parenting from my parents, and also had the ability to be a live baby toy boy for my sisters. So I got a lot of love, and so I don't have any complaints growing up. I really don't. So it's a very, very different upbringing, and I think that has helped contribute to whatever sense of inner security I have. And it has really been a real blessing for me to, you know, go through this world that we live in with that in my background. So,
okay,
I'm a passenger.
So you're perfect.
No, not perfect, okay. But definitely I have a foundation that I feel many people don't have, weren't fortunate enough to have. So I want to help impart whatever that can be to others.
Okay, so do you feel in some way that your childhood or upbringing had something to do with the fact that you were single? You stayed single for as long as
yes,
you did,
I think,
and maybe did it contribute to your choices?
Most definitely, I think that it gave me the strength to not settle, to really get out and find who I wanted to be with, and on my terms as well as hopefully your terms. And it was not until I found you that I was able to realize, I'm done being single, and I'm done looking. And so I very happy that it took as long as it did, and it didn't take a day longer or a day shorter. It took the right amount of time as far as I'm concerned, and because of that, I feel very happy.
Okay. That's just great. And thank you. That's lovely.
Well,
thank you.
Okay.
I'm glad you had that experience. Some of us didn't, you know, weren't as lucky, I guess. And again, it's all relative. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into that. And I'm wondering whether we should... Okay, let's bring Margaret. You want to bring Margaret in
now? We can bring her in. Yes, we have 4 minutes to
I'm going to introduce our guest because she's fantastic. And this is exactly up her alley and in her wheelhouse. Dr. Margaret Rutherford. She is a clinical psychologist and has practiced for 25 years in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Her work is found on her own website as well as Huffington Post, Psych Central, Psychology Today, The Gottman Blog, and others. She's the author of Marriage Is Not for Chickens. Man, are you... Tell me about it. A perfect gift book on marriage, and she also hosts a weekly podcast, Self Work. Her new book, Perfectly Hidden Depression, will be published by New Harbinger in 2019. Dr. Margaret Rutherford, welcome to Done Being Single.
Well, just welcome, listening to y'all, Dr. I think I'm right. I'm on target about marriage, not for chickens.
Well, we are not chicken any longer.
And there you
thank
go.
You for, thank there you for you being go. On the show.
Thank you. It's delightful to be here.
Go ahead, Margaret. Sorry.
No, I was just saying it's great to be here.
Okay,
you know, Treva, I think what you were talking about when you were talking about not blaming, I wrote down the word acknowledgement, because I think that that's really what you're talking about, to go back and try to acknowledge what any child would have experienced given that particular set of circumstances. And if we can, people who blame stay a lot in anger, and they're certainly not going to date well or marry well because they're angry all the time or sad or afraid or whatever. But if you can go back and acknowledge what it was like, then you can have compassion, and we can talk all about that. But I think the word you're searching for is acknowledgement.
Okay, right. Because you don't want to spend your days blaming. You don't want to.
Correct.
Otherwise, then you become a victim. Right?
Right.
Yeah. And
exactly.
So,
and
I'm sorry.
And the other thing, you know, Robbie, that you were saying that you know, the difference between y'all's childhoods, which was interesting to listen to, was that you had basically sort of four parents. It sounded like your real ones and your siblings. And then,
right.
You know, when you felt very protected and secure and safe. And Treva, you had a different kind of experience. I would offer that, you know, kind of to your point, Treva, that our childhoods inherent in them is our vulnerabilities. Even if parents do everything right by the book, and then their kid goes off to college or the military or gets a job, those children have a vulnerability because guess what? The world outside their family isn't going to be that nice to them. So every childhood has something lacking. And whether it was abusive or traumatic or actually pretty darn good, there are things you don't learn in those families that then you are trying to learn in your other relationships.
So how do you, I know I said repeat patterns. You know, we've got 1 minute. I'm going to ask you, I may just have you answer this question after the break. So let's just think about it, about repeating. Okay. This is what it all comes down to, repeating, being a legacy to what you saw and experienced growing up and how you don't have to be. Just because my parents didn't stay together, because I didn't see healthy role modeling, I don't have to repeat that. And how do you not? So that's the question.
After the break.
After the break.
So we're
going
to go to our break right now.
Okay.
And
okay.
We will come back with Dr. Margaret Rutherford.
Now, back to Dunn Being Single with dating badasses Treva and Robbie Sharp.
And here we are. Oh, what's this?
My mother never breastfed me. She told me she liked me as a friend.
Okay, well, that has a lot to say about something there, doesn't it? So
this is funny. It's like one part comedy club, one part therapy session. One part talk show.
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. So let's continue.
All right. So the question was about how the hell do you break the habit of attracting and or dating or loving that which is familiar? Just because something's familiar doesn't mean you should be with them.
Right, Trevor. What the issue is here really is that oftentimes you are telling yourself that it's something different. Because it's really that familiarity is more what we call unconscious than conscious. So you have to do your own work. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to go into therapy. But, you know, what I call your picker, the person you pick, is inevitably going to be someone that you're trying to heal with. I mean, that's an emotional and psychological construct that's true of every relationship. But you can pick someone, for example, you can grow up in an alcoholic family and pick an alcoholic without recognizing what you're doing. So if you're doing your own work, what that means simply is that you're going to figure out, like we were talking about a few minutes ago, you're going to figure out what vulnerabilities that your particular childhood held for you. If that's not being loved well, then, you know, you want to really watch for being loved by someone who's needy, who will center their life around you, or someone who's controlling. A lot of times control can look like love or possessiveness. And if you grew up without a lot of love, you can see how you might be attracted to someone like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, so just as an example, what if you grew up with a mother that stayed in a marriage with a father that either cheated or, drank? Okay, and you saw that growing up, and that's your idea of what you need to do. That's what you're a wife. You stay regardless. How would you counsel someone like that? How would you help that person not seek the same quality in her father again?
Right. Well, the first thing that came to mind was that person is going to have a huge issue with trust. So there, what was played out in their parents' relationship was a lack of trust was okay, and a lack of respect was okay. So their tendency may be to either pick people that, again, and repeat the pattern that are untrustworthy or not expect or require or be assertive about respect themselves. So what you can do is try to, you can go into therapy, you can read books about, you know, what do I do when I've been reared in this kind of family, what are going to be my tendencies? And then you do your best. In some notes that I wrote you, I realized that when you're in what I call lust love, a lot of this goes out the window. And so you will ignore things that early on in the relationship that you should really pay attention to.
Right. Yeah. Been there, done that.
What if the person is...
In fact, there's a great book called... it's by Daphne Kingma, Coming Apart. And she talks about how we all, in a relationship that breaks up, if you think back, you'll remember the event. You'll remember the experience that you had with that person that was a flag to you. Whoa, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. And you didn't. You avoided, you ignored, you discounted. And those are the things that you don't want to do, because usually you're going to get triggered, and those experiences that are disappointing and are flags are going to be something from your childhood and your past.
I absolutely agree. I think we've got a comment.
We're still waiting. But what about people that are in denial about acknowledging these patterns? And how is there anything that friends can do to help friends that are not in therapy but are remaining close, but it seems like they don't want to acknowledge some patterns that may be
self-destructive,
mm-hmm.
or self-sabotage.
Well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Right.
I think a friend who is concerned and sees someone making a choice that is could be destructive for the person, the best thing you can do is to just simply say what it's like for you to watch that person engage in this relationship. If you start saying you're crazy for, going out with this guy, or I don't know what you see in this girl, then unfortunately in lust love, you're probably going to be discarded or discounted or ignored. But what you can do is to say, it sounds like he doesn't call you or text you back when you text him. What's that like for you? What does that feel like for you? I mean, you can, and it's hard for me to see you do that because you're upset about it all the time, and it's hard for me to know what to say to you. You just simply stay in the relationship with them and comment to them what it's like for you to see them suffering in a bad relationship.
That's good advice. Okay, we have a caller. Lizette is on the line. Lizette, are you there?
Hey, yes, I'm there. Great. Wow.
How are you?
Hi, Lizette.
Hi there. Hi, Dr. Rutherford. Hi. I'm not such a big believer in therapists, but Dr. Rutherford, you really seem to hit a lot of this right on and have a lot of insight. I loved what you said about acknowledging what happened in your childhood and what your takeaway was from that. I really believe for myself that I form lots of defenses and lots of beliefs from my childhood about kind of who I am in the world and what to expect from other people. And so part of my journey has been to look at myself and to write out my history, you know, my family history, because I do think that I recreated that and some of that drama, working it through with partners later.
Self-examination. Welcome to the club I'm in.
We all are, and I think it is lifelong work. I'm on my second marriage now, but I just have some suggestions about what's helped me kind of change my picker a little bit, you know, about the broken picker. And so I did some writing, and I asked myself some questions about what did I take away from my adolescence, from those, you know, going out into the world, whether I had a good childhood or a bad childhood, the experiences that I had, you know, as you said, that parents don't raise us and, you know, send us out with a shield, you know, or fully formed. We just aren't when we go out into the world. And so then, you know, that led to me feeling kind of unworthy, I think, you know, having some scary experiences, bad experiences. And then, you know, of course, I developed defense mechanisms. And so I still look at what, you know, what do I do to kind of push others away and keep myself safe, and whether they're working for me or not. Because ultimately, if I really want connection, I'm going to have to kind of realize that I may be okay right now. Whatever was in my adolescence or the past is the past.
I have a
Elizabeth, I think what you're talking about is picking up on journaling and keeping a diary or whatever, and writing things out in black and white is a very helpful tool. There's something about seeing something on a page in front of you that that helps you understand it better, and it's interesting because it also once you see, you'll see a pattern in your writing. You'll see, gosh, I seem to talk about this a lot, or I seem to focus on that a lot. So it gives you some, it lends some objectivity to your thoughts, your experiences, your actions, your behavior, and your past. So I think that's a great tool, and that's a great thing to offer to this discussion.
Okay.
I have a question for
The other thing is that I found a couple of mentors, you know, who suggested this writing, just what you said. And my picker, as I said, at times have been broken, so they suggested that I write down 7 qualities that I would like to find in someone, not 20, but like 6 or 7 fundamental qualities about respect and honesty. Those were the kinds of things I came up with, not how many dollars or not how good looking someone was, but just fundamental traits, kindness and things that I wanted that maybe I didn't experience earlier. That helped me a lot to stay focused. And then when I was in bad relationships, and believe me, I've had plenty of them, these mentors and people suggested that I would write down, what am I getting and what am I giving up? A list. What am I getting from this person and what am I giving up by being and choosing this relationship? So those are just 2 more pointers I have that personally really are helpful.
Well, when you've had a bad relationship, I think it's important to wait long enough for you to analyze and to figure out, what was I not getting, or what was I not receiving, or what was I not giving? How was I acting in the relationship that I really need to change? Now, I told Trevor and Robbie this. Waiting is the one piece of advice that is the least followed that I ever give anybody, because we all don't like to be lonely. And so, but if you can wait long enough and do that kind of work, quote unquote, on yourself to know, what do I really need to be different about me? Not to focus on, I need somebody else different. When you're dating, I dated someone short, so I want someone tall. But to, I'm being silly about that and overly simplistic, but you get it. But how do I need to be different? If I wasn't talking about what made me angry, then I need to make sure I'm talking about it now. If I, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay, so...
I know some people find it very hard.
Sorry, Lizette, we have to go to a break right now, but we will come back. We have some more callers on the phone, too, that we will deal with. Thank you so much, Lizette, for your advice and your input. And we're going to be back in a couple minutes.
And now, back to Done Being Single with dating badasses Trevor and Robbie Scharf.
Okay, well, we are back and with Dr. Margaret Rutherford, and we have a caller, Freddie. Freddie, are you on the phone?
If you can hear me, I'm on the phone, but there's gardeners, so I'm going to go and hide in a room. Can you hear me?
We hear you fine. Thanks
well,
for calling
now
in.
You're going to not Freddie. Hopefully hear. Hi, your show is fantastic, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in. What you got, Freddie?
Well, I have so many stories. Do you have like 4 hours?
No. But how about four minutes?
I'll just start with my parents. They were sort of like the very first in the early 50s conscious uncouplers. They did that weird conscious uncoupling. So they were best of friends. We did everything together as a family. I didn't know anything different except my parents were the closest of friends. We did everything together. Two houses, though.
Interesting.
And I didn't know the backstory till I was in my 20s. The backstory is my mother, could I say fucking?
Yes.
You just did.
My mother was fucking one of my father's friends.
That's not good.
That he put them in business together to be interior decorators. So my bit is they were doing some interior decorating on a bed and in our house, I think. My father had polio.
Who had polio?
My father had polio, so he was physically handicapped.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Was this with your father's knowledge? Was it behind his back?
Like behind his back, but like maybe he couldn't get into the room where they were. Do you know what I'm saying? He walked with a cane and a brace. This is my fantasy but he figured it out. I think the guy pulled a gun. I'm very shady, like on 340 South Roxbury Drive in Beverly Hills, by the way. They broke up.
Okay. Let her finish her story, Mr. Sound Effects Man.
So they broke up, but they were best friends. We went to Little League games together, Nate Nels on Saturday together. My father would talk to my mother about people he was fucking. Nothing ever panned out for my mother in a relationship because she was kind of high maintenance, and eventually she became like an agoraphobic.
Your mother did.
Now, the whole time in my childhood, they make jokes. At our 25th divorce, when we've been divorced 25 years, let's have a divorce anniversary party. So at the Friars Club, my brother and I, in our 20s, threw my parents a roast. My father was roasted by comics. And they're still
great.
The best of friends, whatever, whatever. But nobody gets remarried, so 35 years after divorce, he remarries her because he's 20 years older, and he thinks at 80, he's going to die in her 60s. She's going to live 20 more years with his Social Security. So he calls me and he goes, I'm going to remarry your mother. I'm not going to fuck your mother. I wouldn't fuck her with my cane, but I'm going to remarry her. So it wasn't for romantic reasons, but my parents, at the end of their life, were remarried to each other.
Oh, I'm out of breath listening to this.
Okay, so this is wacky.
It sounds like a normal childhood in Beverly Hills.
How did you not repeat the wackiness? Or maybe you did in your marriages.
Okay, so here's how it affected me.
It did, or did not?
I have two marriages under my belt. The first marriage, I was thinking with my uterus.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how I didn't say pussy? I was thinking I've got to have babies, and I picked somebody. No offense, Dr. Rutherford. He has a PhD in clinical psychology. Crazy. No offense to all of the
Okay.
Sorry.
Just can't help yourself.
He was the wrong choice. And he is the one that cheated. So I relived it in the sense that my dad kept saying, you know, he's going to meet a girl that he's going to fall in love and start fucking a girl he meets in the program, meaning the PhD program. And he did. My dad was right. My dad was an old sage.
If I can insert something here, Freddie, I was sitting here listening and just jotting down words, and one of them was, you know, something that looks normal or looks amicable, certainly. There were still secrets, and yeah. So that whole dichotomy of something looks like it's happy and everybody's getting along, and even though we're not together, we are together, and we talk about our sex lives and we talk about all this stuff, like it's not really affecting us, but there obviously still was something going on where they weren't being totally honest with one another, and so you grew up in that, and it doesn't surprise me, unfortunately and sadly for you, that you chose someone that looked safe, a PhD in clinical psychology. What could be healthier than that? And which is not true at all. But anyway, so there were secrets, and he was going to have affairs.
I knew that he really wasn't that stable. I was really thinking, I've got to get some kids. And I went and got 3 kids with him. Yeah. And then he cheated when I was pregnant with the 3rd child. He was cheating. Mm-hmm. And he's still with that woman.
To me, it's interesting that you would know that he wasn't trustworthy, and yet you would go on in the relationship and choose him, whether it was to have children or not. There's something very poignant about that to me.
Yeah, it's called driven. Like, I didn't have ambition as a person that would have ambition. I was an actor. I had very little ambition. Most of my ambition went into being driven to just, I wanted to be a mom. Just wanted to be a mom.
Mm-hmm.
Found the guy with the sperm and went for it.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah, can you come back every week, Freddie? This is really...
This is...
No more callers, please. We have a winner.
Yeah.
Let me go out and do some more things and then come back.
Okay, question for Freddie. So how did the second marriage... What choices did you consciously make so that your second marriage would be better?
Now I'm going to give props to therapists. My ex-boyfriend... from when I was young, this guy named Mark Conti had a mother whose name was Ruth Conti. She was now like in her 80s when I met the new person. I went into Nate Now's one morning and I saw him, and I used to say to anyone that I ran into, if I knew them or didn't know them, hi, my husband just left me for another woman. Do you have anyone to set me up with? And no one would set me up. No one, not one person. That was like my line. I would say it to anybody. So I walk up to him. I saw him at a kid's birthday party. I'm like, hi, my son is Oliver. Your son's Max. We should get them together. But do you have anyone to set me up with? Because my husband left me for another woman. And he looked at me, this guy, at Nate Nels, and he went, my wife and I are divorcing. And I went, oh, well, in that, I thought he was coming on. And I went, well, then in that case, you can ask me out. He called that day. We've been together 27 years.
Oh, what? This is incredible.
But sometimes I look at him and say, are you sorry that I was in Nate Now's that morning?
You could have been a Factors, and that, who knows? Who that time.
As a joke, he sometimes says, because like Broadway Deli was our first real date, so we go on a date at another deli, and it closed, and I came home crying, and he goes, I'm sorry, I should have taken you to Cantor's on our first date.
Okay, this might be a little inside for people that are outside the LA area, but
a match made in deli heaven.
Yes, I'm getting hungry.
Okay, well, so the good news is that just because your first one didn't make it, the second one can, and there has to be Margaret. I mean, there's got to be some reflection and some growth, and right from in between marriages.
Wait a minute, I can't hear because. Freddie's talking and you're talking, so I can't hear either one of you.
I wanted to circle back to the therapist. My first boyfriend's mother was a therapist, and I called her and she said, Freddie, treat him as you want to be treated. And I wasn't listening because I'm really dizzy, and I was like, hi, yeah, Ruth. She goes, Freddie. She underlined it, and she said it so dramatically and so slowly. Freddie, treat Michael as you want to be treated. And I went, ding, ding, ding. I'm going to do that, Ruth. Okay,
that's
now
well, that's very similar to a book called The Four Agreements, which has been around for quite a while, and it's one of the points, the kindness and that kind of thing. Is so that's a great point.
Okay,
that's
so I by the way, great
life.
Book. I credit that book for a lot of my personal growth. So okay, mm-hmm. So based on what Freddie just said, what if you don't know how to be treated? What you know, treat him how you want to be treated. Well, what if you weren't treated very well and don't know from being treated very well? Where do you find that in yourself, that self-love, Margaret?
Well, I think that a lot of that is again, it's your work. You have to, in your friendships, in your other relationships, notice what you are, you know, what you expect. I think Freddie said, you know, she wasn't expecting much from her first husband, and she didn't get much from her first husband, so, except children. And, you know, at that point, you have to begin to wonder, well, am I coming out of my childhood with big blind spots about, for example, if you never saw physical affection between your parents, then you may not believe that that's very important. So educating yourself with, you know, talking to your friends about noticing what other families are like. They're families where apologies are never given. And so guess what? They get in a dating relationship or a marriage or any kind of relationship, and they don't know to apologize. They don't know that that is a helpful thing to do. Some people don't show gratitude. I mean, any kind of, it doesn't have to be abuse or trauma. It can be just normal, everyday patterns in families that you will tend to repeat. So some of us have to learn the hard way. I certainly had to learn the hard way. And yet, you know, with enough self-reflection, again, you are going back and saying, what do I see in other couples? What do I see in my aunt and uncle? What do I see in my grandparents that I didn't see, or my friend's marriage that I didn't see in my parents' marriage? And what am I wanting to create? I think Lizette said she has 7 expectations. That's great. You know, you have those things, and maybe there aren't things that you experienced yourself as a child, but you are going to try to learn how to create them yourself. And Treva, you said from the very beginning, you believe in the fact that people can change. I have seen 70-year-olds make changes in themselves that then thus change their relationships. So, you know, yes, it is never too late to make these changes and these revelations and to create a much better or different relationship than the one you saw in your childhood.
Totally agree.
Well, we have to go to another break right now, but Freddie, we want you to stay on the line because we're going to continue with you and Dr. Margaret. So we will be right back in a couple minutes.
And now back to Done Being Single with married couple and dating ass kickers, Treva and Robbie Scharf.
All right, we are back for our last segment, and we actually do have another caller on. Freddie, stand by. But we do have Joyce. Joyce, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Joyce. How are you?
Hi, Joyce. Hi. Great show. It's definitely striking a nerve with me.
Okay.
In
well,
what way?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because I was just listening to Freddie, and, you know, she and I had similar but yet incredibly different childhoods. But, you know, I grew up with a really narcissistic and somewhat abusive father and a loving mother who just wasn't at that time really strong enough to deal with his craziness. And my parents divorced when I was about 11 years old, and probably many years too late, except for the fact that I got great brothers out of it. But at the time my parents divorced, I basically had to become a caretaker. My mom had to work 3 jobs. She had to take care of us because she was getting $27 a week child support, and that was just not enough money to, you know, keep food on the table or a roof over our heads. But one of the defining moments of my childhood was catching my dad with my mom's best friend, my Aunt Arlene, one day when I was cutting school with my girlfriends, and it was where I shouldn't have been. And funny enough, my dad wasn't where he should have been either. and it definitely rocked me. And I never told my mom about it until I was much older.
Did your father see him?
My father did not see me, no. But it, you know, obviously it really, I mean, it changed our relationship dramatically from that point on. And it's also where I became my mother's protector. And around that time that I really started to stuff my anger and my resentment. So the things that define my childhood are, you know, I discovered later in life, obviously, was that, you know, that's what informed me in my relationships as an adult. And
how did it affect your choice of partner, would you say?
You know, it's really interesting. Honestly, I actually had a great picker. Developed a great picker. I don't know how, but I did. And it was me. I was the one that was the problem. I decided that I was never going to be weak. I would never stand for a man cheating on me. I would become strong and fierce and never let anyone hurt me. But what happened is that I became the hurter. So at the first sign of trouble, like no matter how insignificant it may have been to someone in the relationship with me, it was monumental for me. And I would start case building so that I could cut and run before anyone had a chance to hurt me. And, you know, I became a warrior, but my armor was intractable. And, you know, it took me years and years and years. And, you know, I like Trevor, I'm like a late blooming bride. I didn't get married until I was in my 40s. And because I had an incredible lack of trust because I didn't trust myself. And it took me years and years of therapy and, I did Al-Anon, Course in Miracles, Kabbalah classes, every self-book that I could read, Four Agreements, which was great, Drama of the Gifted Child, all of these things. And, of course, getting older and wiser, you know, I was finally able to recognize how to be in a healthy relationship. Because I really was forced to analyze my thoughts and my actions, and using your words, Dr. Rutherford, I was able to acknowledge the origin of my insecurities and my fears.
Did you also begin to have compassion for those vulnerabilities?
Yes, I did, but it really took me a long time, and honestly, I probably still struggle with it. But you know, I'm a work in progress, even at my age. And, you know, I've been, let's put it this way, I didn't get married till my 40s, and I've been married for 14 years. So,
not to get all psychologically theoretical on you, but there's an interesting thing called the Cartman Triangle, where he says that if you have abuse and trauma in your life, that you will take one of three positions: perpetrator, victim, or savior. And you can actually move in your lifetime to take those different, to play those different roles in your relationships. So it definitely sounds like you were so damn sure that you were just geared toward, I'm not going to be a victim, that you were your mother's savior, and then you became more of a, it's a dramatic word, but a perpetrator in the relationship. You were more aggressive. You were more angry. And
yes.
So it took lots of therapy for you to get out of that tendency to take one of those roles. And it's very common, and it when you really think about it, it's easy to, when you grow up in that kind of household where you have one parent who's very submissive and even loving, and then another who is not, that you would develop this sense of distrust and guardedness, and I think you said a shield. So sadly enough, I'm glad your picker was good, but then you had to develop your own detachment and grief from being in that, being reared in that kind of environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I had to come to terms with the fact that I was the perpetrator. So, mm-hmm. I spent a lifetime, many years rather, case building, pointing fingers. Mm-hmm. It was always something that someone else was doing. And
well, I think it's wonderful that you have that kind of honesty.
I'm sorry I interrupted you.
It's okay.
I
think it's wonderful that you have that kind of honesty with yourself and are able to reveal that, to a Voice America audience. And it sounds like whatever guilt or shame or whatever that you've had about it, that you've worked through it. And then I'm assuming, based on sort of the tone of what you've said, that you now have a relationship that's much more productive and happier and more fulfilling.
Absolutely.
Great.
So,
absolutely.
So we only have a couple minutes left in the show. Freddie, are you still on?
I'm on, and I
okay.
want to say one
this
thing.
This has been incredible. Freddie, I know that you are in your current marriage for a long time. What patterns have you experienced with your kids that you have witnessed in yourself and your parents? And we only have a couple minutes.
That is a heavy question.
Is it
for
a heavy question?
Yeah,
shit,
you know
sorry.
What? Let's do another episode. We'll do another show on this. This is a part two. This is for sure a part two. I just want to say one thing to Margaret. That just, your triangle, that was just a breakthrough for me. I mean, that really just, I wish I would have known about the triangle. That would have cleared up a lot of confusion for me a long time ago, because I am a little savior and I am a little perpetrator. What's the third?
Victim, savior, and perpetrator.
Yeah. All of that. So thank you for that.
All right, so we're gonna wrap it up then.
Yeah, so much more.
Sorry, Freddie. We'll get you back in.
Joyce,
awesome.
Okay, so
Dr. Margaret, thank you.
Let me just tell everybody about your upcoming book, Perfectly Hidden Depression. Okay, so you guys look for it. It's gonna be published by New Harbinger next year. Is that right? Next year, 2019?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'd love for y'all to hop over to Self Work with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean. It's all over the place. So
excellent.
I'd love for y'all to meet me over there.
Fantastic. We will. All right.
So we are wrapping up this week's show, which actually is our 13th episode. So congrats, baby.
Yeah.
We did it.
Our
first season.
We're going to take a little break.
We're going on a little vacation next week.
Okay, right. But then we'll pick up again
Saturdays.
May 26th, when Gay and Katie Hendricks are going to be on the show.
Excellent.
Okay. So I think until then, you guys, thank you again. And thank the listeners. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on this journey. This is great. And We are done being single.
Yes.
And I hope, and I think everybody else is too, which will be nice. And you can thank us for that, right? You better invite us to all your weddings.
So, yes, we'll see you next week or 2 weeks.
Thanks. And I love you.
Love you, honey.
And thank you for helping me get through my childhood.
And thank you for
helping
me.
You are a fantastic partner in this journey. You really are. I thank you for everything, your help, your support, your patience. Oh, my God.
I love you.
And thank you. And more Mishigas to come.
See you next week on Done Being Single.